and you're very welcome to STEM Inspirations, a series of podcasts brought to you by the BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition. Now, this week we are with absolute royalty. We have a conversation with the co-founder of the Young Scientist, Dr. Tony Scott, and he's being interviewed by past winner of the Young Scientist, Emer Hickey, and they talk about where the idea came from, the Young Scientist competition, and also what impact it has had on the young people of Ireland. So sit back and enjoy a conversation with Dr. Tony Scott.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Emer.
Thank you so much for coming to speak to me, but also to many other people online. I just fire in with the questions. I just go for it. We can have a catch up at the end.
Of course we can, yeah.
Okay, so obviously you've dedicated your life to learning and teaching the sciences, but what do you think a pursuit of science and technology can offer a young person?
Difficult question. I suppose the answer is what science can do is it enables one to know. I mean, young people wandering around, they often wonder, you know, why does that happen or how does that happen? Now, if you've studied science, it enables you to know with certainty. Can I give you an example? If I look out the window now, I can see the sky is blue. I know why the sky is blue, because I have science and you have science, and we can talk about tinsel scattering, so we know why the sky is blue. Now, if you look at, let's say, a painting by Turner, and you'll see the sky is that, but you can wonder, why did he paint it that color blue? But you can't say the certainty as to why he painted that blue, but I know why the sky is blue. So that's the kind of the difference.
Yeah. Do you remember like a moment when you were younger that you suddenly became interested in science? Like, do you have one of those moments?
No, I never had one of those moments. What I do remember is, I remember as a child, when I was a child, which was an awful long time ago, I used to get presents from my dad at Christmas and my birthday. And I remember getting a little electrical sets, and I used to do things with the electrical sets. And I remember he gave me a chemistry set as well, which I remember had one disastrous effect in my bedroom, but we won't talk about that. But I mean, the electrical set, I began to investigate and see what I could do with it. And one thing I remember very vividly, a friend of mine, I had a train, one of these windy up toy trains, but a friend of mine had a beautiful electrical set, magnificent set, which he had set up in a room in his home. Now, the things that I had were mechano sets. These were mechanical things which you could put together, and I had a complete set of 10 unit, 0 to 10. I could make a lot of things. But anyway, John, who had this electrical set, and he said, could we put lights on the station? So I built stations out of mechano, and I put lights on them, and I wired them to his electrical one. And I wired it in such a way, and it took me many, many years to figure out how I did it, but it worked, that when the train came into the station, the lights in the station went up. And then as the train moved out, the lights went down. And it was much years later, I was trying to figure out, how the heck did I do that? Well, that was just an example of being involved with science. So I suppose my dad was one, if you like, put science in front of me. And then I was very fortunate that I went to a school with fantastic science teachers and ones that inspired me to try to become a scientist. I haven't reached there yet.
Yeah, so it sounds like you were curious about science from quite a young age, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, I suppose I started off with mechano sets, and then I remember my dad giving me a little electrical set. We operated off little batteries, obviously. They weren't mains because they would have been too dangerous.
Yeah.
I suppose that was the progression. The first thing was the mechano sets, putting things together, doing things, and then getting the electrical set and the aforementioned chemical set, which I'll draw a veil over.
There's a reason you didn't go into chemistry, right?
I have a degree in chemistry too, but physics is more or less I might know a little bit. I don't know anything about chemistry. Well, I know a bit about chemistry too, but
You have a degree in it. You have to know something about it, surely.
Oh, I do, yeah. Yeah, I do. I know a little bit, yeah.
So a trip to New Mexico was what led you to co-found the Young Scientist Exhibition back in 1963?
That's right, yeah.
Can you explain how that came about?
It came about because Father Burke and myself were doing research in atmospheric physics, and it was a tradition in the physics department. Atmospheric physics had been going there for 50, 60, 70 years probably. And we had my own professors and Father Tom's professor, Professor Nolan, with a man called Pollock, devised a device for measuring or counting the aerosols, the little particles that are in the air that on which water vapor condenses. We called it a nucleus counter. And the people in this university, University of New Mexico Engineering, I think it was Mining and Technology University, they wanted a copy of this instrument. So what we did was Father Burke went out first of all, and he was going to work there, and I was going to join him a little bit later on. And I brought out a model of this this counter, and we built one out there for them in the university and calibrated it. But Father Tom went out first of all, and he sent me a letter saying there was a young boy here who had built a rocket. And when you come out to join me, we'll look at this rocket. So anyway, when I went out the next morning out in the yard of the Conrad Hilton National School, I remember it well, in a place called Socorro, which is about 75 miles southeast of Albuquerque, which most people would have heard of, probably not Socorro. So this little chap, whose name was Gary, he had built this rocket, and he demonstrated it, and I took photographs, which we still have, of Father Burke looking at the rocket and me obviously taking the photograph. And safety and health didn't seem to come into it because we were standing there when the blooming thing went up. But we asked him, why was he doing it? And he said he was doing it for a science fair. Now, a science fair meant nothing to me. I don't know about Father Tom, but it didn't mean anything to me. But he told us there was a science fair going on in Albuquerque in a month's time or something like that. And he told us a bit about this competition. Now, I actually wasn't able to go to the science fair. Father Tom did. I had to go on. I was going on to the University of Berkeley in California to do some research work there. So Father Tom went to it. And when we came back to UCD at the end of September, he started telling me about this. And we wondered, would it be possible to start it here in Ireland? And the reason we felt we needed to do something about this was that at that stage, science hadn't got the profile that it has nowadays, and we wanted to encourage young people to do science. So we thought, well, maybe this idea of a science fair or a young scientist exhibition, as we prefer to call it, might be the answer. And that was where we got the spark of the idea. And then, of course, there was a lot of work going to get it. We had to get a sponsor, first of all, which we did. And then we had the first one in 1965, which I still remember. It was compared to the sophistication of today's ones. I mean, it's amazing, but interesting, as you know, Emer, one of the first winner comes over to judge the young scientists every year, John Monaghan, a great man, and a great believer. He flies himself, flies in a plane, obviously, as a passenger, and comes over and judges for us every year. And I think that's a measure of the influence science had on him and his career and what he wants to put back into it.
Yeah, definitely. I was wondering, did this young boy who built that rocket, does he know that he practically inspired such a, I guess, a movement in Ireland? Did you ever contact him again?
No.
Where is Gary?
Where is Gary? I don't know, because I was back some years ago. There was a competition, there still is a competition, called International Science and Engineering Fair. And one year, I judged it for, I went over to America for about 10 or 11 years each year to judge it. And the year that was in Albuquerque, I tried to see, could I find Gary? And there's a paper in which is produced, I think, in Socorro or in the hinterland of Socorro called El Defensor Chieftain. And I put a little note into that before I arrived to see, could we find Gary? But I never found Gary.
Oh. You
know, I never had his second name, unfortunately. I just knew him as Gary. But Gary was the impulse that got us going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think? Obviously, you talked about the first competition back in 65. Mm. But what do you think has made the exhibition, I guess, like stand the test of time and that it has kept growing and kept going? What is it about it?
Well, first of all, it's very much directed towards the young person, people in school, and to start discovering science in school, what they can do within the school themselves or what they can wonder about, which is outside. I mean, it's very easy to do, as you know very well, it's very easy to do research when you've got a really, you know, the facilities of a very large research lab.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in school, you don't have the facilities that, you know, that are available to people in universities. But they can get an idea and ask the question that I always say, the question is, how does it happen? Why does it happen? And then using their school and by researching in the libraries in the early days and on the net nowadays, finding out more about it and then doing simple experiments. So it's very much centered on the young person or the young people themselves. And it's up for them to explore what they're trying to find out and find out, you know. And I think it's because it's surrounded by the young people themselves and the interaction of the young people in the RDS at the science fair every year, science exhibition every year. I think that's the inspiration for it. I mean, you should be answering the question yourself because why did you take part?
Well, I took part because I really wanted to be creative with science. I felt like learning just from the textbook, I wasn't as excited by it. So I really wanted to do something outside of the curriculum. And definitely that was what got me interested in science. And I mean, it's why I'm doing a PhD now. It's from doing the young scientist experiments. So,
yeah, well, you see, you had an interest in it. And that's the interest. You dangle something in front of young people and they try to wonder why or how or explore for themselves.
Yeah, and it's to be able to be creative. Like you can actually, people don't think that science is that creative. Let's say it's not like painting. But you can be so creative in science once you have like a hypothesis. It's up to you to, I guess, create a way to prove it or disprove it. So
yeah, but I mean, young people ask, I mean, my old grandson who, some years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, he was out in my back garden and he picked up out of a mint, some mint, and he smelled, got the smell of mint leaves. And he came in and he got one of these, you know, the you can spray things for getting rid of odors.
Oh, yeah.
And he sprayed both sides of the leaf with this, wherever, I won't give you the trade name. But he sprayed both sides. But he said, but I can still smell the mint. So he wondered and he did something and it raised a question. No, he wasn't obviously able to answer it. I don't think I could answer it either. But I mean, at that idea, that time came to him of associating the smell of a mint leaf and a deodorizer spray. Maybe if you put the two of them together, one might cancel out the other.
Yeah.
That happens to all young people. They can discover
curiosity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How does it make you feel seeing how far some previous BT young scientist participants have come or how far like winners have come? Like, how does that make you feel?
Well, I'm in awe of them, first of all. I'm sure I speak for the late Father Tom and myself. We're delighted that that the Young Scientist Exhibition gave her an opportunity to discover science, to develop their interest, their great interest in science, and then to go on and do research and higher degrees. And some of them have made very good industries, companies, you know, out of what they learned in the Young Scientists.
And I'm sure they have a lot to thank you for as well, seeing as you.
No. It's all on the student. It's not on us.
But you helped inspire it. So.
Well, we gave them the opportunity, but they did the work themselves. We weren't able to go around and beat a child into saying, come on, you've got to do a Young Scientist exhibition. The inspiration has to come from them. The interest has to come from them. And the carrying out of the work has to come from them.
Yeah. Now, this is something about you that I wasn't aware about. But you developed the smoke alarm with your research student, Dr. Mike Byrne. And then since then, over 80 million have been made. And so, you know, it has literally impacted the world. Can you speak to how, you know, working with science and technology has the ability to have much wider impact? Like, what's your experience with that?
Well, I mean, the story in itself is interesting. I mean, the idea of a smoke alarm had been around for a little while. And the company called General Electric had a branch in Shannon. Mm-hmm. And it was given to that company in Shannon. It was called the EI Company in Shannon. And they were given the job of bringing the smoke alarm, the original design of the smoke alarm to the market. But they couldn't quite get it to work. And somehow or other, the chief executive there, obviously heard of me. I don't know how he did. But anyway, he heard of me. And he contacted me, and two of them came up to talk to me in my lab and asked, could we get this early prototype that they had, which was a bit unwieldy, into a more compact model. Now, the reason we could help was that in the research group for the Tom and myself were in atmospheric physics, there was a great tradition of this, of doing basic research. So I knew a bit about the aerosols, which I mentioned to you earlier, and aerosols and ions interact with each other and how they interact and behave and their thing called their mobility. In other words, the speed in which they move in an electric field. We knew a bit about the theory of it. And then Mike Byrne was my research student. He was just finishing his PhD at the time. And they came to see, can we do this? Can we get this simplified? This simplified is not the right word, but to do, get this model into a working model. Mm-hmm. And so Mike was in the lab in UCD in the physics department. And we looked at the problem, and then we applied the knowledge that we had from 50, 60 years of research in the department. And we applied that to this, and we developed this within, I think, 5 or 6 weeks. Cracked the problem. And then this was a working model. And so we had to go down then to Shannon and get a prototype built. And I think the figure 80 million is not quite right. I think it's well over 200 million have been made. And there's a company down in Shannon. I think they employ about 700 to 800 people building smoke alarms.
Wow.
And that company now has a turnover of, I gather, about 300 million a year.
Wow.
From one simple idea. And it came about, it brings across to me the very important thing that it's kind of overlooked by many of our senior people, the importance of basic science, basic mm-hmm. research. Okay, they all, funding research, they all want you to do research that can produce, you know, products that can make money. Fine, you can do that. But unless you have done the basic research, the fundamental research, then you're not able to move on to that stage, if you like, to commercialize it. And the reason we were able to do or help to develop the smoke alarm was because we had behind us 50, 60 years of basic research, and we knew the fundamentals. And yeah. Say 5 to 6 weeks, we had cracked the problem.
Wow, that's impressive. Right. Wow. What breakthrough in science recently has excited you the most? Is there anything happening in science at the moment that excites you?
Oh gosh, there's so much excites me. I mean, I suppose the most relevant one at the moment is the development of a cure, if that's the right word, or a vaccine that mm-hmm. will help us get over this blooming COVID-19
yeah.
problem. And again, it shows you that if you can get a group of scientists working together in a single way and applying all the basic knowledge that they had about, I mean, the gene structure of the virus itself and how they can penetrate that and how they can modify that. And that is now, okay, biology is a little bit beyond me, and chemistry I can manage, but the amount of work that has done and the fact they were able to do it in about 6 to 8 months is absolutely amazing.
I think it highlights really the importance of collaboration as well, because it's been very much cross-disciplinary. So it's not just the biologists, it's everyone. Yeah.
Well, it's just the biologist, but I mean, you can have a basic idea, but you still have to turn it into a product.
Yeah. If you had advice for this year's applicants and participants, what would it be?
The thing that I always ask the students when I go and sit down beside them, I always ask them this three simple questions. What did you set out to do? How did you do it? And what did you find? And it's like a story. It has a beginning, which is your idea. It has a middle, it's the work you've done on it. And it has an end, it's what you discovered. So what I'd always advise people is, if you get an idea, go and explore it and try and get help to advise you. But try and make sure that you, when you put that thing on display, that you have completed, you've tied all the edges together so that you have a complete package. Now, I'm not saying that it can't be further developed. Of course it can. You should be able to again explain this for your project. I remember yours very well. You did a lot of work after you did The Young Scientist, didn't you? You with Chagas and people like that.
Yeah.
About that. So, I mean, I should be asking you questions, not you asking me.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to ask for help if they need it and advice. That would be one of my biggest things.
It's not only ask for help, but where can you get help?
Mm.
And this is where I think the teachers play such an important role.
I remember we found as well, it was very easy to get help because especially from kind of researchers in universities, even just for advice via email, because everyone knew what the BT Young Scientist was. So people were very willing to point you in the right direction or send you a research paper you might need. So yeah, it's just reaching out really.
The thing is that if it doesn't, sometimes you start research and it doesn't work. I have a classic remembrance. Professor Nolan, who I talked about earlier, when I was doing my MSc with him, he set me a project to see could I produce aerosols by, we knew we could produce ions and what have you by fracturing water, but if you broke small crystals, could you produce aerosols that way? So I built a piece of apparatus and I worked on it for about three months from September until coming to December. And I was going absolutely nowhere. He immediately saw, and this was his, because of his knowledge, he was able to see that I was up a cul-de-sac and it wasn't going to work. And he said, well, let's give that one, we'll put that one aside and he gave me another project to do.
Mm.
So that's very important to realize that if you're doing your research, that sometimes it doesn't quite follow through. And you might have to abandon it. Maybe somebody might pick it up later on. But you might have to abandon it and look, going off in a different direction. It's like coming to a fork in the road. Will I go left or will I go right? And sometimes when you go left, you end up in a cul-de-sac. Whereas if you've gone right, you might get an answer.
It's the lovely thing about science. Even if the result isn't the result that you wanted, at the end of the day, it's still our results.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You should always, the main thing again for these young people doing the thing is to write everything down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if it doesn't work. I mean, I still have my MSc book where I wrote everything down, and particularly these 3 or 4 months where I did a lot of work and got nothing. but I was able to write all the experiments that I did and didn't work. Which was strange to keep it. But I mean, sometime somebody might want to go back into that again.
Yeah.
And I'll be able to dig out my rather battered at this stage MSc book, and we can read it up. So for young people doing science, it's very important that you write down, because, well, I don't know about your memory, but my memory, I could forget what I did yesterday. I can remember some of the things I did yesterday. But it's very important that you record everything that you do.
Mm-hmm.
How trivial, it might be trivial or what have you, but put it down in paper so that when you go back to look at it the next day or a couple of days or in a week's time, you can flick back over the pages and see, I tried that and it didn't work, or I tried that and it did work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to record what you're doing.
Yeah.
Fundamental. That was the thing Professor Nolan always, I was going to say beat into me, but that's not the word to use. Something like, what temperature did I have? What concentration of the chemical did I use? Or what have you? Or, you know, what did I do? Exactly what did I do?
The little details.
The little details. And it's so easy to forget it. So for the young people who are doing it, write everything down and try and go back over what you've written and see if there's something that you might have overlooked, or try in a different way that might give you a different result.
Yeah.
That's the important thing. But record everything. It's very important.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
One of my great joys and happiness is meeting you people again, because, as you know, you're one of the winners. You come back and help us during the year. And I love meeting all the people from the previous winners, from John Monaghan in 1965 down to you. You were 2003, were you?
No,
2013. 2013, sorry.
Yeah. I would have been a bit young in 2003.
Yeah, 2013. But I mean, it's lovely meeting you all together. And the great thing I hope it gets through, that we meet as equals.
Mm-hmm.
We meet as friends who have a common interest. I know you always go around trying to spot the winner, which of course we will never tell you. Sometimes you guess it, but sometimes you get it totally wrong. That gives me great pleasure.
Yeah, we get it totally wrong most of the time.
But have you kept contact with all the people who, not only the winners, but the other people who took part with you?
Yeah, I was going to say it's one of the best things I got out of the whole experience, is I have a lot of friends that I've met through the BT Young Scientists. And like you said, all the past winners, we meet up every year, but we'd be in contact all throughout the year as well. And it's kind of like a little family, really. And even just people that I participated alongside back when I was like 14, 15, I'm still in contact with some of them too. And like you said, it's people with a common interest, people who are just interested in science, in all aspects of science, and also in promoting young people's involvement in science. It's definitely one of the best things that I got out of it. And I got friends like you out of it as well. So, you know.
The interesting thing is that on day one, on the Tuesday and the Wednesday, when you start assembling your stands, you're all kind of separated from each other. You don't know each other and you're a bit shy and what have you. And then when the judging starts and you begin to interact with us, how your personality and your ability to communicate develop. So the Emer that came in on that Wednesday was, and the Emer who left on the Friday, or Saturday, as it was in those days, were two different Emers.
Yeah, I had completely lost my voice. So
it wasn't that I was talking about, but how you had, over those 3 or 4 days, how you had developed as, well, a scientist, obviously, but as a communicator.
Yeah.
Because you might do the best science in the world, and if you can't communicate it, it's useless.
Yeah, it is one of the things that I think the exhibition really does promote. It really highlights the importance of being able to communicate what you've actually done. And it's so important in science. I mean, you even see it with the vaccine development. You know, they need to communicate that vaccine well in order for people to take it up. You know, it's so important in science these days, is the communication of it.
Yeah, I mean, I often wondered if the young scientist, if I would have been at your age, and the Young Scientist was running, would I have had the confidence to take part? Probably at the time, and my vintage in those days, I wouldn't have had the confidence, you know, because young people were to be seen and not heard kind of thing. But over the years, and because the Young Scientist, because it has a certain ethos, word has got out that it's a nice thing to do. The judges are generally friendly towards you. And we can meet many great friends. And it's an experience I will remember for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I think that's a comforting thought.
I mean, where I am now, I'm obviously, I think there's only two Irish people in the lab, so everyone else is from all over the world. And I've tried to explain what the BT Young Scientist is like. And the thing is, it's not in other countries. Other countries don't have the same sort of this event where nearly the whole nation comes together and just celebrates young people in science. Like, I mean, it really is very special. They were saying, like, a lot of them say, you know, yeah, there probably is science fairs in my country, but I mean, not that many people enter them. Whereas, you know, in Ireland, it's for the week that it's on, it's the main thing that's happening in Ireland. It's incredible to think that we celebrate young people in science that much.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, when we got the initial idea in America, we realized the facilities that were available to young people to do the science. And certainly, it wasn't the same then for young people in 1965 as it is now. But still, the thing that we kind of insist that the work is done by yourself in your school, within the school laboratory, not by coming up to a large research lab as you're working in at the moment.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing, it's to keep it, I use the word simple, but I don't mean the word simple, but to keep it within the constraints that are given to you as a student in school.
Like us in their bedroom.
Or a bed. Oh, well, a bedroom, yeah. Well, don't talk to me about bedrooms and chemistry, please. But I mean, the fact that this, it's open to everybody, and nobody has a higher rank or higher point of achievement that is dictated by the facilities available to them.
Yeah.
Okay, nowadays you can get help, but as you know, if you get help from any institution, they have to write and tell what they did for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the other thing I think that has changed from the very first couple is presentation of their work on the board. You know, on the boards, the first ones were done handwritten, what have you. And then you went through letter set, and then the very, very crude computer generated models, and now to the very sophisticated posters that go up there.
Yeah.
That are there. They're the changes. But again, the science is still the same.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the communication of it that hasn't changed. But the young people are not afraid to communicate, and I think that's the great thing. And you probably, secretly, you probably will admit it did change your life for you.
I wouldn't say it's secret. It definitely did change my life.
Yeah.
So it set me on the career I'm about to embark on as well. So
yeah. The other thing, of course, we realized was we have a cutoff of you must be in secondary school to be doing it, you know, roughly 12 years of age upwards. And then we started the primary science fair. And that's great excitement too.
Yeah, it is.
And are you judging that? You are?
Yeah, I'll be judging at that this year.
So you know it from the inside and the outside.
Yeah.
And I think you can experience the young people trying to convey their ideas to them. And I thought some of them were really, there was someone there a couple of years ago and I went in and he was talking to me as an athlete. Now I was never an athlete. I used to play things, but he was talking about lung capacity, you know. Gosh, when I was their age in primary school, lung capacity wasn't in my vocabulary. But he was able to devise a simple method to measure your lung capacity. Mm-hmm. And what they had was a plastic bottle full of water, and you blew into it. And the amount of water you could blow out was a measure of your lung capacity.
Mm.
So in a very simple experiment, but
Yeah,
they're great.
They get so excited in the primary science fair, just even telling you about the project.
And they just want to tell you everything. And this is the excitement that the primary science brings about. And then, of course, once you sow the seed, this, of course, your area, seeds, once you sow the seeds and let it germinate, they can germinate and progress from the primary science into the young scientist. And I think that's the idea. So that's the young scientist.
An absolute legend, Dr. Tony Scott there, and what an inspiration he is, and what a debt Ireland owes to that man. And great to see him going strong with such enthusiasm as well. And again, thanks to Emer Hickey for yet another fantastic interview. I think RTE or Sky will come a-calling someday. And thank you, of course, to listening to another STEM Inspiration podcast. We'll be back with more of the same very, very shortly. In the meantime, to find out what is happening with BT Young Scientists, check out btyoungscientists.com or follow us on all the social platforms at btyste is our handle for all of that. But till the next time, stay curious.